Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand. The fabulous, the fluoridated, the allegedly irradiated, but of course we don't know because they stopped testing the seawater for it, which is really good. We're also, incidentally, marked as Transparency International's least corrupt country in the world, which is awesome. You know why? Because they have a voluntary form. Hey, bro, are you, engaging in large quantities of corruption, screwing over your own people, selling out the country to foreign bankers and stuff like that? And you go, nah, bro, nah. And they send the form back blank, and then we're number one least corrupt. Oh, I love it. You can't make it up, ladies and gentlemen. Everybody thinks that I'm crazy and I make it up. I'm not making it up, all right? You cannot make this stuff up, okay? I'm not that creative. I really am not. I'm pretty creative, though. Anyway, my very special guest is Tracy Thompson. Tracy, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Somewhat fabulous. That's the stock standard response. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and what it is you do?
Okay, what it is I used to do? I used to be a support worker for Lifestyle Choices, which is looking after people with intellectual disabilities so they can stay in their own homes.
A lot of work around the House of Parliament, I imagine, with all the people there that have intellectual disabilities, apparently.
Exactly, yeah, you're not wrong there. and all departments. It's the hardest part, you know.
Yeah, apparently Treasury is the hardest one. You know?
Yeah.
Be like, balance sheet. They're like, huh?
computer program. What do you mean? We don't do computers. What are you on about? No.
They don't know anything past Windows 95. All right, so when we're talking about support workers and things of that nature, specifically what area are you talking about?
That's not my issue, though.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case, don't worry about it. Head on to the issue.
Good. Yeah. Okay, my issue. I hurt my shoulder whilst working. Easily done, unfortunately, in my age. Applied to ACC. Pretty much got turned down as far as getting surgery. Only place to go is Work and Income, unfortunately. So I trot in there after having gotten some reports from my surgeon stating that I needed physiotherapy. So I went and got another report I went in and got some appointments at a physiotherapy, thinking this is all good. Trot in there, sit down. Unfortunately, my surgeon had ticked the box less than 6 months, so of course you have to get discretion from the chief executive. So they trotted off and did that, and I got a phone call back a couple of days later that I couldn't get enough money to cover my physiotherapy. I mean, that's a bit weird. So I go back in a week later, start doing the paperwork. Then the computer program comes into play because they were applying for temporary additional support for me. Problem was, I was only getting $4 and $5 out of temporary additional support. I'm like, pulling my leg, I need more than that. You know, and so I was there for 2.5 hours and it was doing my head in, and I was very, very sore because I just had surgery. And in the end, they just kept saying to me, it's in your benefit. I said, I'm sorry, it's not. Look, I can show you the sums. There's no money there, you know. I don't have extra money. So in the end, I picked up all the paperwork and stormed out. Okay, not super aggressive, just walked out and thought, you're too much for me. I go home and I start looking at the paperwork and I'm like, how does this assessment? Now, we've got to remember, most people, if no one sees an assessment that comes out of the computer program for temporary additional support. So I'm trying to do the maths and I'm like, this just isn't working. Why am I paying money to get hardship? So I went back and I told them, look, I'm paying money. You're taking money off me before I can even get any money. So they said, well, you'll have to review it. So I reviewed it. I lost, not surprising. So then I thought, okay, go and do an appeal. So I did the appeal. Nearly got killed on the way, but that's all good, and ended up with a big fat fine for going across Grafton Bridge, which I didn't even know had been closed. I had no idea you couldn't go on Grafton Bridge to the hospital. So anyway, I lost the appeal. I'm like, oh, you're pulling my leg, dudes. Seriously? So I thought, okay, what do you do from here? Right, you get a lawyer and you appeal to the High Court. But first I appealed to the government, right? I thought, okay, look, Paula Bennett needs to know about this. So does John Key, so does Bill English and everybody else involved. So I wrote to them all. No real response. And then I got a lawyer and I couldn't get legal aid. I thought, you're kidding me. Why can't I get legal aid? And they're saying it's because it's a government issue. I said, well, that's really funny because the government's saying it's a court issue. So then I go to the High Court, which I have to do myself, unfortunately, and that's not easy work. So I went through all the regulations to find out where I stood in the situation that I was in, because due to all of this, I was ended up with a $1,000 bill that I had to pay WINS, because under the regulation of TAS, it states that it will pay your car if you were paying your car off prior to coming on to the benefit. So I was only paying $25 a week. It was no biggie. It was only $1,000. But I ended up having to pay them off with a loan. And I'm like, well, hold on a minute. This straight away tells you that your computer program's wrong or your regulation's wrong when it states it will pay it, but it won't. So I took it to the High Court. That was not good. Not good. I was in court for an hour and a half. By myself, and there was a Crown lawyer. It was a woman. Now, 3 weeks before, it had been a man that was representing the case, but they changed it. Now, we were up in front of Mr. Judge Benning, right? An hour and a half after my case finished, between an hour and a half and 2 hours, I got a 14-page decision, which isn't too bad. I'm thinking, these guys are good. You know, they're really good. Wow, if he can type that fast. And listen to my submission, because I didn't read it out in court. Read my submission, read the novel of a submission that the Crown had produced. And so I got the outcome, and I'd lost. I'm like, seriously? How could I lose? I'm meant to get temporary additional support. So, of course, I'm upset. So I try to appeal his decision. I put in an interlocutory request or whatever it's called. No, he wouldn't give me an appeal. So I'm like, okay. So I went thoroughly through this TAS again, right, just to see exactly what's happening. And what I've found is it just doesn't affect me. I thought it was all about me initially. Then I realized, no, this is countrywide. This is tertiary students. This is unemployed. This is sickness beneficiaries, invalids, super annuitants, low-income families, every one of them. So you're talking at least half the country is involved in this era. Now, I'd like, can I explain to you what the era and how it's come to be?
Well, yeah.
I mean, they thought they had an issue with NovaPay. Oh, forget it, mate. This is 9 years worth.
Yeah, see, that was NovaPay. This is just straight up no pay.
This is no pay. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, absolutely. So what they did was back in 2004, Labor was running for Parliament to go for elections again. And they thought, well, okay, we want to help families, which is really good, right? But they knew they couldn't put the tax down because it wasn't going to give the people enough money. They couldn't put the wages up because, again, that still was not helping, right? So what they decided to do was bring in Working for Families. So they put the tax credits over to the IRD and the benefit was only paid in part at WINS, right? But they also changed what used to be called special benefit to top up people's benefits if they had high costs, especially accommodation costs. But because the way that special benefit was set up, anyone that received special benefit, because it was so discretionary, would be getting the 25% that the government says they should pay out of either their income or their benefit for their accommodation costs was being paid through special benefit. So in all the wisdom of the powers that be said, I know, we'll put an accommodation loading in that will go up every year. So it started at $20. Now, you know, you'd think that's fine. Except they didn't talk to the computer dude that was doing the programming. And he already set in place within the program the 25% that a person's meant to pay. So if you look at it, it's kind of like double dipping. They're saying, okay, you pay the 25% and then you pay the $20.90, which now in 2014 has become $24.89, right? But we think that's bad enough. But then it moves on that they're also using the 5%. because 70% of a person's income is living costs, right? Then 25% is your...
Unless you're a billionaire, of course, in which case, like, nothing percent of your frickin' income is done on living costs. They don't spend any money on anything that they need.
Exactly, that is so true, yeah. So what happens is they turn around and they use the 5%, because as you can see, 25 and 70 is 95, so we've got 5% there. So they use that as the calculation as well. So they don't just take 24.89, they'll also take another, if you're on a sickness benefit, another $11 on top, or if you're a single parent or a family, that can be up to $30-$40 a week.
A lot of people that have been on benefits of some kind have expressed to me how insane they think it is that they're getting money from the government, and that money that they get from the government gets taxed and then goes back to the government. It's like a snake eating itself.
Yes, true. But then it also gives, I suppose maybe, I don't know, in the background that it measures up, that that's what it's got to be, you know? Maybe everything has to be seen to be taxed.
Yeah. Hey, there's only one, what was the old saying? There's only two things that are certain in life, death and taxes. My contention is that it's the taxes that are killing you.
Yeah, but we need the taxes. So, yeah.
If you say so, because as far as I know, most of it just simply goes overseas to the offshore banks that create money out of nothing and then charge us interest on loans that they don't have to do anything or pay any or do any work for, and then we have to work by the sweat of our brow in order to pay back money that doesn't freaking exist.
True.
So, you know, I think taxes could probably be lowered by about 90% and kick out the bankers, and then we could probably have all our state services and everything still running today perfectly, no worries, and we'd all probably have about a 60 to 70% increase in our income. I'd like that idea.
That's not a bad idea. Chances are it'll never ever happen, but it's a nice thought.
Yeah. Well,
become a billionaire, you'd be sweet. You don't have to pay those taxes.
Yeah. Well, see, currently there's no actual law requiring anybody to pay income tax. So I wonder what the heck that's all about. And it turns out that income tax, specifically, just that income tax, what is that?
Yeah.
It's between something along the lines of between 20 and 33% or something. Income tax specifically only goes to the interest on the foreign debt. Only that. All of the other forms of tax that we pay in rates... GST, all of that kind of stuff, that's out, or petrol, that's roads, that's services, that's hospitals and everything. All the income tax, which is the bulk of the tax everybody pays, straight to the offshore bankers. And that's just nasty. And there's quite a few, what was it, Democrats for Social Credit, I think, they've been around for quite a while, and then saying that, hey, you know, maybe considering the foreign bankers just make the money up and charge us interest for it, maybe we could just make the money up ourselves and not charge ourselves interest for it. I don't know. You know, maybe it's just wishful thinking, being able to do pretend things and pretend that it doesn't have a bad consequence. I don't know.
Yeah, wow. Woo, you've been doing some thinking.
Yeah, it's one of those unfortunate things when you listen to the truth.
I know, isn't it awful? And that's the thing that I've found with this. That breaks my heart, is everywhere they tell you to go. Go and see Simon Bridges, your local MP. I would love to do that, but he won't meet with me. See, got to wonder about that one.
Everybody tells me, you know, you should never burn bridges. In this case, I think we can make an exception.
I think definitely make an exception. Yes, so true. Or just all drive over them constantly. That would be even just as good.
I mean, well, I would suggest that his hair product is flammable. You know, I mean,
I've never met the guy, and I got trespassed from his office, seriously. And he wouldn't know me from a bar of soap. If he bumped into me, he wouldn't know who I was.
Just chuck an orange at him, you know. He'd never know which drive-by fruity it was.
Thanks very much. I heard that. So anyway, how can this happen? How can Paula Bennett be totally aware, this government going on about poverty and using it for point scoring within the election, when not one of them doesn't know what I'm talking about? And I've got the paperwork to prove it. And they know. And even the select committee said, you're not meant to be charged that deduction because you're not requiring accommodation costs through TAS. Just that one simple thing, you know? But why is it that I can go to all the top lawyers, well, not all, okay, but a lot, not one of them will take my case on? Even though they're registered legal aid, no, won't do it.
It's because they're part of the law society and they have all these rules and everything. In fact, former police prosecuting sergeant Grace Hayden just did a presentation in Helensville a couple of days ago. The video's up on my YouTube channel now. And it turns out that the police, the law society, and all the lawyers are kind of like all sort of working in concert to a degree, and react to protect each other, sort of like antibodies or white blood cells do to an immune system, because it's sort of like a tripod. If you kick out one leg, the whole tripod falls, and they know that if they allow any individual lawyer or cop or anything like that to be exposed as doing the corrupt business that they just kind of do on a daily basis, then the whole thing might actually fall out of the sky. And that's why people get really confused when they go from this authority that's supposed to help them to that authority that's supposed to help them. And they realize if they have enough bad experiences, mind you, that the authorities aren't really there to help you.
No.
They're not there to help you up. They're there to keep you down.
You'd think human rights would be in on it. No, they won't touch it. You would also think the ombudsman, no, we're not touching it because you've been to court. Everyone goes, you've been to court. So what? I didn't have a choice but to go to court. Just because I went to court does not stop these things to be investigated. But yes, they're definitely holding tight. You've got to give it to them. They're keeping it well done. You know, they're playing by the rules and none of them have broken the rules yet. They're all sticking so close together. I don't know if you've ever played that game Stonewall.
Is it when you ask a politician many, many questions and they don't answer you and they just keep stonewalling you?
Those ones, yeah. You know, you should know. Well, yeah, there's that. But there's a game called Stonewall, actually created in New Zealand. And you have these bricks, different lengths. And you throw the dice and you've got to get from one side of the board to the other. But every time you do, you put a wall up. So a person gets to the wall, then goes back and goes around the other way. But you're never allowed to totally stop them. They've got to be able to get there. But they've always got the hard way, the long way. Quite often you're backtracking. I've been playing Stonewall for 3 years. Eventually, I'm an optimist. I'm a bloody optimist. Eventually, I will get to the other side. You know? Or maybe it's that digging through shit to find the pony, right? I'm an optimist.
Well, there's an old story about this. A bird was flying along. What was it? I think it was a sparrow. It was flying along in really cold weather, and it got frozen solid while it was in mid-flight and fell to the earth. A cow came along and cramped on him. Mm-hmm. And the nice, warm cow poo thawed the little bird out, and he was alive. But he was covered in crap. He couldn't get out. And then a cat came along and dug him out. And the bird thanked the cat very much for digging him out of the crap. And the cat thanked the bird and then ate him. What's the moral of the story? The person who digs you out of the crap ain't necessarily your friend.
Oh, so scary. Yeah. So true. I better do it myself then, don't you think?
Well, this... it's occurred to me that we have a predatory system, right? And how do predators normally do? I mean, do predators attack animals that are larger than them by themselves? Or do they attack animals that are smaller, weaker than them, and then attack them in packs?
Yeah.
All right? Definitely. Law society, police, wins, parliament.
ACC.
Every single one of them.
They're top guns at that.
Yeah. Stay away from hierarchical structures wherever you can, you know.
Yeah, but sometimes you don't have a choice, you know, and if we all stay away, then they stay the same, and we can't have the same. Even if you've got to go through a lot of doors, people tell me, especially politicians and anyone within it, just let it go, you know, but you can't. If you let it go, then it stays the same, and it stays the same for the next lot of people and the next lot of people, you know, and the next generation, and next thing, our country is just an absolute mess. And that's because of apathy. And apathy...
I'm not sure if it's apathy. I think it's more specifically pessimism. The willingness to think that doing nothing is somehow more effective than going out and doing everything that you can.
Mm. Well, I'm an optimist, and I know I shouldn't be because it's never proven to work, but it's enough in me to keep going. Just keep going, you know, never surrender, just find another way. There's always another way.
And you said that there was a large quantity of money owing to beneficiaries around New Zealand because of this this very systemic glitch that you're suffering through the processes of.
Mm-hmm.
How much are we talking about here?
I haven't totally done the maths, but I'm talking a couple of billion, if not, be a lot more, because I was looking at that at just beneficiaries. I hadn't even thought about it in regards to low-income families that apply for accommodation supplement, and they will never get enough accommodation supplement because it's set at 70%, but you never get 70%. So all of those people as well. And plus your tertiary students. So you pull got kids, people at university or at Polytech. So we're talking huge, you know, absolutely huge. And when I said I'm an optimist, right, because sometimes this scares the heck out of me how big it is, and because I'm on my own doing it. And then I think, well, hold on, there's two ways to look at this. Now, back in 1991, the government found that they needed to get money through the country, right, because the economy was quite flat. Now, I thought, now, how are we going to do this? So the first thing they did was they tried to asset test the elderly for the superannuation, right? So what that did, to a certain extent, it put money into the communities, but they also got a lot of the elderly who were far wiser than the government, and they put it into trusts, right? So therefore, it never showed as money that they owned, so therefore they got their superannuation. So that one didn't work. So then the government goes, okay, gosh, we need another vehicle. We need a vehicle. Where's that vehicle? ACC. Okay, now you've got a lot of money. What are we going to use? What can we do that is going to get money out there? So what they did is they gathered in anyone that had been raped, molested, whatever, you know, anything, any sensitive claim they could find. So the government goes, wow, that's the excellent sort of people we need, because we know they'll spend the money, they'll spend it quickly, and it's money going around, right? So everyone goes in there, charges in, gets their money, spends it. Then the government goes, right, that's enough, right? We capped how much we were giving, shut the gates. So then they shut the gates and people couldn't get it, their lump sums, the way they used to. I wasn't involved in it. It's just something I've heard of. So when you look at that, then I go, well, wait a minute. What if I'm meant to be getting these people to go to the government, get their money back, but the stupid judge and all the people around are stopping it?
Maybe.
Stopping the money going out.
Optimism. Here's my problem with it. You think optimism makes you think the judge is stupid, whereas somebody who's looking at like pure reality thinks the judge isn't stupid at all. He's a criminal psychopath. And incidentally, if you look at kiwisfirst.co.nz, written by Vince Seymour, another court watchdog, he discovered that out of like 100 and I believe it's 163 high court justices, 126 of them are related by blood, first cousin at least. And our Supreme Court of the land, has 8 judges, and 2 of them are a husband and wife. You try getting an independent judicial inquiry into anybody in this country. You know, I dare you, ladies and gentlemen, go for your life, son. See how far you get. It's literally the family.
Well, I've been in front of a few judges, right? Not for anything criminal. Once I was in front of so many judges because of the fisheries, because I was the first one to find out that their stickers were incorrect. Remember when they had that issue?
I don't recall.
Oh, okay, well, the fisheries had a huge issue on that. They had these stickers that people were measuring their fish against. This is a funny story.
By the way, we've only got about 90 seconds left in the broadcast.
Sorry, we'll forget about the fisheries. But anyway, Judge Benning, the one I had, he'd already done a case where he should never have done it because the interest of what came from the outcome was good for him. It was against NIWA, and he owned part in a forestry. So
that reminds me of the time Vince Seymour was suing Michael Stiassny, and then he had these 3 judges presiding over his case, and Vince Seymour said, 2 out of those 3 judges are former Stiassny lawyers. Can we have them struck off? And then the 3 judges go, no, there's no conflict of interest. We're not corrupt. Proceed.
I'm not overly trusting on Vince Simon, but there you go. Everyone's their own. You know, I unfortunately had meetings with him, and he had written up a story that wasn't accurate and wouldn't change something I'd said about a judge that was not for publication, and he knew that, but he published it anyway. And then when I asked him to remove it, he just, yeah, he was nasty, very nasty. Oh, well.
You know, activists, yeah, ladies and gentlemen, we're all freaking damaged people.
But we got to fix this WINS thing. This has got to get fixed. This is money. This is people. This is poverty, you know. And I know there's a myriad of reasons for poverty, and I know that it's probably whatever, but why not make the government give back what it owes? These tertiary students are studying really hard to improve themselves and going hungry doing it.
Mm. And then, of course, once they achieve their academic inflated degrees, they wind up going home and playing video games, you know, because there's no work out there because the economy has been destroyed.
Exactly. That is so true.
Isn't that ironic?
And say, oh, we want them back. What the heck would they come back here for? Just because our ancestors ended up here doesn't mean we have to stay.
Yeah, yeah.
They ended up here because they were starving in blooming Ireland.
Yeah, I doubt there's a whole bunch of people who think, you know what, I really want to go back to Easter Island.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a frigging desolate wasteland, bro. It's not worth it. It's just not worth it. All right, thank you very much, Tracy Thompson, okay. Ladies and gentlemen. Do you have a website or blog or Facebook or something like that you can post? Iterate for the listeners?
Yeah, I have Facebook.
And can you just tell us what your Facebook thingy is?
Oh, well.
It's just Tracy Thompson on Facebook, isn't it?
Yeah, you've Googled me well. A few things have come up, yeah.
Yeah, but it's Tracy with an E, ladies and gentlemen. T-R-E-A-C-Y. Oh,
dude.
Is it?
I'm getting flooded. But I don't mind. Yeah, this is, you know, if it happens, it happens. It's got to happen. We've got to get this sorted out. So the more people I can have on my side to do this, the better off we are, you know?
That's right.
And the rich win too. It's not even just about the poor. Imagine how the rich would get on if we had these billions of dollars floating around the place and all of us people spending it.
Well, they already have billions of dollars floating around in their bank account, and something tells me that they're psychopathic, crazy scumbags who got that money because of their psychopathy, not because of their empathy. Thank you very much, Tracy Thompson. And you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, ladies and gentlemen. Check out our great sponsors, the Gourmet Soap Kitchen on the homepage there, thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, and Blue Shield as well, if you want to protect yourself from that EMF nasty EMR radiation stuff. It's pretty rough, actually. And also, just remember, this is a listener-supported broadcast, so please go to the homepage and sign up to start donating regularly today, and give us some of your slave money so that we can resist the scumbaggery government that steals it off you anyway. Good night, everyone. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Now joining me from Waiheke Island is none other than Paul Carruthers. Paul, welcome to the program.
G'day, Vinnie. How you doing?
Yeah, somewhat fabulous. Standard response, as you're aware. Would you be able to give us a little bit of a breakdown? Because you asked me to just post something for you on my Facebook about the Lord of the Rings and how much money South Canterbury Finance lost on it. And just to bring the audience up to speed here, Paul Carruthers probably knows more about South Canterbury Finance and... I'd say he knows more. He's certainly the only one who's willing to speak publicly about the truth behind these issues and the Alan Hubbard killing and the massive corruption that was actually involved in basically stripping the assets of one of this country's largest stable finance companies that was still owned by a New Zealander. So, Paul, if you wouldn't mind, go right ahead.
Well, actually, his widow... Jean has said categorically that I would know more about the subject, as much as if not more about the subject than their lawyers do, because I actually spent more time with Alan during the 15-month ordeal before his death than they did.
So, I retract my statement.
The only difference is that I spent my own money trying to defend him, and they charged him $5 million and never said a word, so I'm not quite sure how that worked, but, you know.
Well, it probably only works if you're a criminal, psychopathic scumbag, but all right, go for your life.
Well, mate, the reason why I posted the stuff about the Lord of the Rings is because if you look at everything that's going on in the political landscape in New Zealand at the moment, you've got we've got this infuriating situation where you're watching Alan Hubbard being hanged out to dry. The Sunday Star Times did an article 2 weekends ago, big 2-page spread, mate. And it was, and it basically, the headline was the Alan Hubbard fraud trial. Now, I don't know if anybody remembers, but when Alan Hubbard died, they actually dropped the charges against him, and yet somehow, mysteriously and magically, that man is still on trial. And he's never set foot in a courtroom. And none of the evidence that's ever been presented against him in the public forum and the media has ever been independently verified or tested or cross-examined or anything.
Paul.
It was all provided by private sector insolvency practitioners who were appointed by the government without a court order or a warrant.
This brings a whole new meaning to the word habeas corpus.
It does, and here's the point. If somebody asked me point blank, do you believe that Alan Hubbard's lawyers failed in their duty to care for their client, I could only answer with one word, and that is spectacularly. In my opinion, they failed spectacularly in their duty to care for their client. And those who have any basic understanding of the law cannot comprehend how 15 months went by, their client was utterly destroyed in the media, all of his assets were sold, and not once did they make any presentation to a courtroom to try and get their client out of that situation, and that's disturbing. But anyway, that's by the by at the moment. The reason why I raised the Lord of the Rings issue is because I spoke to Alan a lot during that time, the 15 months, and he told me a lot of things about different business dealings he'd been involved in, and one of them was the Lord of the Rings, where he invested $30 million. Now, you can Wikipedia this. If you Wikipedia Lord of the Rings, you will actually find an entry relating to South Canterbury Finance's loss of $30 million in that film. If you actually read the links, if you read and study carefully the links, all of the links, it takes a lot of reading, but if you study carefully the links that I provided in that post about last night about South Canterbury Finance losing $30 million in Lord of the Rings, you will be absolutely horrified, because everything I'm saying is verifiable and it's proven documented fact. So it's just that nobody in the media, there's been no investigative journalist has come along and pieced and joined the dots and pieced it all together quite as comprehensively as I did in that post last night. So all you've got to do is go back over the timeline. And the only question you need to ask yourself is this: how did three movies, which cost a total of $350 million to make, but grossed more than $6 billion at the box office, and bear in mind, that's only in ticket sales, that's not merchandise, right? So they grossed more than $6 billion at the box office, and yet it only cost a total of $350 million to make those three movies, and it lost money. How did it lose money? Now, if you read the post carefully, because I don't want to go through it all in fine detail now. That's what people's eyes and their own brains are for. They can read it if they're interested, right? But if you read the post carefully, you will see right at the end, the last sentence, Alan Hubbard, and I'd sign and swear an affidavit on this, Alan Hubbard told me that he hired a money laundering investigator who confirmed for him that the profits from Lord of the Rings went to the Cayman Islands, which is a tax haven. So the makers posted a so-called loss. Peter Jackson himself had to sue them. Everybody involved in the making of that movie, including 15 New Zealand actors who were promised royalties for merchandising of images that were in their likeness, never got paid. Those 15 actors sued New Line Cinema. Peter Jackson sued New Line Cinema. A whole range of people had to sue New Line Cinema to get their contracted share of the profits, which just went up in smoke when they declared a loss. And even in the newspaper article references that I posted on that post, you can see quite clearly Peter Jackson himself is on the record as stating that is questioning New Line Cinema's accounting methods, right? So I've gone into it in detail. I've taken all the evidence that Alan Hubbard gave me, and the bottom line is that New Line Cinema, right, didn't even stump up less than 10% of the total $350 million cost to make those movies. The BNZ was asked by New Line to raise the money to make those movies on the local market. And they did. They did a capital raising, and that's how South Canterbury Finance invested $30 million in it, and a whole range of other New Zealand investors. And guess what? They lost their shirts. Alan Hubbard, after 2 years of fighting it in court, finally settled for, in his words, a couple of million dollars. How the hell did that happen? That's what I want to know. I mean, you've got John Key. He's gone and, now John Key knows all of this, Vinny, and yet he went and gave them a, he went and gave the same people a further $40 million in tax concessions when they already got $200 million plus in tax concessions to make the Lord of the Rings. Now, ask yourself this. It costs $350 million to make. It's on the record that New Zealand taxpayers basically subsidised it to the tune of about $200 million. It's a known fact that the BNZ own capital raising from private investors and people like Alan Hubbard and South Canterbury Finance raised another few hundred million. So it appears that they raised well in excess of $500 million, right, from from taxpayer subsidies and from the capital raising they did through the BNZ, and yet it only cost $350 million to make, but it posted a loss. How on earth did that happen? Somebody needs to go, somebody needs to do a massive investigation into this situation, because it is just, the potential for fraud in this is spectacular.
It's not just potential, it's just all over the place. And you know what's really funny, Paul, is that I'm totally shocked and yet at the same time equally unsurprised by this.
Mate, look, where do you draw the line here? You've got all these people believe... I mean, you and I did an interview a while back showing how a Fairfax reporter did a report. Well, yeah, it was actually an NBR reporter back then. Back 3 years ago, did an article saying, oh, yeah, the other directors that have been charged after Alan Hubbard's death, you know, the charges were shifted across to them for the South Canterbury finance fraud. Yeah, they're going to go into court in 2 or 3 years' time when the case comes up for trial, and they're going to blame Alan Hubbard completely for it. How the hell did they, how did he know that? I mean, did their defence lawyer ring him up and say, hey, Matt, listen, mate, just thought I'd let you know, this is how my clients intend to defend themselves? I mean, seriously, people, use your brains. How did that happen? And then all of a sudden, 2 or 3 months ago, the Timaru Herald, who's been reporting on the trial in the Timaru High Court, publishes another article and uses exactly the same headline and first sentence as that article from 3 years ago. And then lo and behold, 2 weeks ago, the Sunday Star Times does a two-page spread and they call it Alan Hubbard's trial. And guess what? The first line of that article was an exact copy of the two first lines in the two previous articles I just mentioned. So over a three-year period, there you've got incontrovertible evidence that Fairfax Media has run a consistent campaign as to how that trial was going to pan out, and they predicted it 3 years ago. How does that work? I mean, seriously, people, how does that work? I mean, the journalist who wrote that article 3 years alone should be put on trial and prosecuted for trying to prejudice a case that was sub judice before the courts. You know? So, how does a dead man who never had a trial in his life, who was never given the opportunity to defend the charges and accusations against him, is suddenly on trial? How does that work? The charges against him were dropped, and yet he's getting the blame for the whole thing.
Well, that's the irony of it, isn't it? And I was just thinking about this. Everybody's born with like a birth certificate, and you got your corporate person on there or whatever, and the only way you can go on trial or get a ticket or anything like that is if you admit that you admit is if you admit that you are that corporate title and you're not actually alive, that you're basically a corpse. And now they're literally bringing a dead man into court on trial.
Well, they are, but I tell you where Key's weak on it, and I can tell you the exact point of law where he's completely knackered on it if somebody does an investigation. Their fundamental problem is they are actually technically relying on the Hubbard family, not suing them for defamation now, and the Hubbard family probably won't because they're too nice, but that doesn't change the fact that Alan Hubbard is on trial, but what people need to understand is this. The position he was put in the first place, and even the investigation itself, right, was never never, there is not one court order or warrant to justify the position he was put in the first place. And this is where Key is fundamentally weak as a point of law, right? And where his lawyers are wide open. If somebody does an investigation, his lawyers may yet have to answer why they didn't get their client out of that situation on a writ of habeas corpus, because they could have done it in 10 seconds flat. Because no court order or warrant was ever sought to put him under investigation or put him into statutory management in the first place. This is what people need to understand. That man's assets were seized and sold by the Crown without any court order or any warrant. John Key is so exposed on this because he has used the power of ministerial, he basically has used the Crown to bypass the courts to put a citizen on trial and seize and sell all of their assets. And not one court order or warrant to exist to do any of that. Now go and do your research. What I'm saying to you is a proven fact. Right? But because David bloody Cunliffe and none of the other political parties will stand up and say anything about it, and you can't get any leading journalists to open their mouths about it either, nobody believes me. They'll go, oh, well, I'll just sit and wait for David Cunliffe to say something about it, and then I'll feel like I can believe this. That's what's wrong with the system, mate.
I've got, you know, Nikki Hager's book, Dirty Politics, just came out, and when it got released, was like Ian Wishart and Ben Vidgen had already released similar information, like near on a frickin' decade ago, about the direction politics is going and all of that. Yeah. You know, it's old news. Not to mention,
but what this is, I tell you what's going on right now is that I'm watching this all the way through Facebook, mate. What is happening is a classic example in New Zealand of that old saying that people do not believe, and this is a proven fact, people by and large do not believe anything they read or see or hear unless they see or hear or read it in the mainstream news first. Now, this is the fundamental problem. This is why people suspend disbelief on all of these issues and they go, oh, well, I'll wait for somebody in a flash suit who I think has authority to make reassuring noises about this or tell me that it's correct. And then I'll think I can believe it. And that is the fundamental problem. And that is exactly how Key and all of these other politicians get away with pulling the wool over your eyes constantly. Now, I'm not saying David Cunliffe's a crook. What I'm saying to you is David Cunliffe has the facts about the situation and he's not saying or doing anything about it. And the reason why is political expediency, because it's easier for him to have the majority of people still thinking Alan Hubbard was guilty. So there's no inquiry into all the whole thing, because Labor does not want to get into a political scrap with National about why National had to do something about finance company collapses. New Zealand understand this. Alan Hubbard is the fall guy for Labor's failings as well as National's. That's what you've got to understand. More than a dozen finance company collapses occurred before National even got into power under David Cunliffe's watch. David Cunliffe doesn't want to raise the spectre of Alan Hubbard because it allows John Key to attack him. It allows John Key to stand up and say, but hang on, David, we had to act. We had no choice. And the public of New Zealand get caught in the middle of that shit fight, mate. Right? And they go, oh, I don't know who to believe over this. Yeah, I guess it's just easier to believe that Alan Hubbard really probably did bugger it all up. And yeah, we won't just sort of investigate the facts. It's either David's right or John Key's right. One of them's right. And that is the fundamental problem here. And none of, in spite of all of that, the massive corruption goes on and the massive corruption exists. And David Cunliffe did nothing about it, and neither did John Key. And the reason why is because it suits them. So I don't. If you're one of my friends and you're a Labor supporter, yes, I'm sorry if I'm hurting your feelings, but guess what? Tough, because the consequences for New Zealand of ignoring this are dire. If you do not put David Cunliffe on some gilt pedestal here, on some golden pedestal here, and bathe him in light and assume that he's somehow above all of this. He's not. You need to bring him down to ground and remind him that on the 24th of November 2011, he made a solemn pledge to conduct a full inquiry into the sinking of South Canterbury, the failure of South Canterbury Finance. And I expect him, I demand that he honours that pledge, because it is in the best interests of New Zealand for the truth to come out.
Now, also, it's another important point to raise is that, what was my Facebook status that yesterday, Paul? Oh, yeah, when you tell people 1% of the truth, they'll love you forever. But if you tell them 100% of the truth, they'll never listen to you again.
Mate, that's right. You know, and the sad part is you've even got idiots like Martin Bradbury who've actually tried to help John Key get away with this by portraying Alan Hubbard as a fraud. After his death, it's just infuriating. So you've got all these Labour supporters sitting in suspension over the whole thing going, oh, I don't really know. Martin Bradbury said he was a crook and David Cunliffe hasn't said anything. So, yeah, I really like that guy, Paul Carruthers, and I really want to believe him, but, you know, I need permission. And that's what's wrong, mate. Because they're making they're doing the same thing that they don't like John Key supporters for doing. They're putting their man on a pedestal and going, but he can do no wrong. Now, I'm not saying David Cunliffe's guilty of anything. What I'm saying is David Cunliffe knows the facts and he's not doing anything about it. Now, there must be a reason for that. And you can exonerate him till you're blue in the face, but you are not helping your country in the process. I can guarantee you that.
We're in deep trouble, ladies and gentlemen. All right, and I'm not talking about like there's just a little bit of a problem or something like that. I'm talking about totally complete. The plane has crashed into the mountain here.
Yeah, all right. I just want to clarify something here. I like David Cunliffe. I met him at Alan Hubbard's doctor's house when he came fishing for information to see if he could use anything, right? But he just went all quiet after the fact. And that's not because Alan Hubbard's guilty. It's because the Labour caucus decided that when they weighed it up on the balance of things, it wasn't worth making a song and dance about it because they had their own hands are dirty over finance company collapses. And it would just be too... David Cunliffe... I emailed Alan Hubbard's investors the night I met David Cunliffe and actually alerted them to the fact that David Cunliffe was now involved and there's a chance he might stand up on their behalf. David Cunliffe telephoned, and I can prove this beyond any doubt, and David Cunliffe will not deny this because he knows I can prove it. He rang me the next morning in a blind panic and said, don't say anything that I'm involved, don't tell anyone. John Key could embarrass the hell out of me with this, so that proves beyond any doubt that David Cunliffe, what I'm saying is correct, David Cunliffe is reluctant to have any inquiry into this because Labor let a lot of finance companies collapse while on their watch because their own regulatory oversight was poor beyond belief. And David Cunliffe doesn't want an inquiry into that. So it's just easier to leave everybody thinking that Alan Hubbard, yeah, really did bugger it up. Now, you've only got to do the research, look at all the facts I've presented and figure it out for yourself. But please understand this. I like David Cunliffe, okay? He seemed like a really nice guy when I met him. That's why I went running out and told Alan Hubbard's investors, right? This guy might save your ass. He might just help you get out of this. That's why I was so bitterly disappointed when David Cunliffe rang me the next day and put political expediency ahead of the facts. Now, you can't tell me that in less than 24 hours he'd gone and done all his research and decided that Alan Hubbard was guilty. You see what I'm saying? So I want to believe in David Cunliffe, but David Cunliffe has to give me the opportunity to do that by doing something about this. That's all I'm saying. All right?
I do think that this is one of the most important issues to raise in the country's history, Paul. I mean, you realise this, I realise this, but unfortunately, there's just... you know what? Actually, what it really comes down to, Paul, at the end of the day, is because I talk about... So, can I please explain this? Because I talk about so many different things on this radio show, things that people agree with, things they don't agree with, things they can't believe, things that they won't not believe, and all of that kind of stuff. And it's all mixed up together. Basically, people just think that I'm completely crazy about everything, and they don't really listen to the show, or they put it off, or they demonize it and judge me before even knowing me, and as a result, they don't get to hear the important information that could save their freaking country.
Vinny, I can answer that for you, mate, and I'll tell you the reason why it happens. I'll tell you the reason why it happens because people do not, they don't read the majority information you put across, right, or that I put across. Mate, I can see it happen. I can write an article that should take 20 minutes to read and people start liking it within 30 seconds of me posting it, so I know they didn't read it, right? That's a fact. The fact is we live in a world where everybody wants everything compressed into a really convenient format that they can digest in 4 seconds or less. Well, guess what, people? The world doesn't work that way. Some things require reflection. Some things require research. Some things require reading. And a lot of things require thought. And none of these things can be changed without any of those activities. So, you know, and what annoys me is the people that take a passive approach. They sit there and they go, oh my God, that's terrible. Oh my God, that's terrible. And they'll read a little bit of it and a little bit of that and a little bit of something else. And then they'll go off and they'll be distracted by X Factor or something else and they won't join the dots. And what they'll do instead is look to someone like David Cunliffe to save them. You know, they want someone like David Cunliffe to make reassuring noises and present them with all of the answers. And that is why, right, the whole thing is in such a mess. And people like you tend to get overlooked, right, in favor of the mainstream media, because even your strongest supporters don't realize the degree to which they are unconsciously, you know, motivated by this kind of stuff. And they don't realize that even they struggle to really believe something unless the New Zealand Herald actually grabs it and confirms it. And that's why the Nikki Hager stuff has taken traction. Not because Nikki Hager wrote a book, but because the New Zealand Herald and TV3 and everyone else splashed it all over the place and won't let go of it now. And that's the reason why everybody's going ooh and ah about it and why they ignored it when Ben Vidgen and those other guys tried to raise it. That's my basic point. People need to take responsibility for what they are thinking or not thinking.
I think, just have an attention span for once, ladies and gentlemen. You've got on average 8 seconds. All right, did you know that, Paul? That's the average attention span nowadays. 8 seconds. I mean,
you can see it in people's eyes, mate. They tune out.
A woman can't even take off her bra in front of you fast enough for you to hold your attention. That's how bad it is.
Alan Hubbard would be blushing if you said that in front of him. I've got to go.
All right. Thank you, Paul. Just give us 2 seconds and we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number 2 of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand, the fabulous, the fluoridated, the freaking ridiculously corrupt. Oh, my God. I've just been discussing corruption and scumbaggery for so long. And in fact, I've even lessened my exposure to activists who keep telling me all this stuff of late because I've had, you know, I've just got to make so many videos, you know, exposing. It really is proof to my claim that the fractal universe is a total real thing, just as real as fractal scumbaggery. All right, now for those of you who don't know what the fractal universe is, for every single thing that you see, whether it be a planet, a cell, or a galaxy, or a red dwarf star cluster, they all have the exact same pattern and design. Just like scientists discovered that the human brain cell has the exact same appearance as what scientists theorize that the entire universe looks like. All right, what I'm talking about is fractal scumbaggery. For every bit of scumbaggery that you can see, I can guarantee you there is a giant spider web with a million connections shooting off in one direction and a rabbit hole shooting off in the other. And it just infinitely more scumbaggery keeps coming into light for every single little bit of scumbaggery you look into. And it's freaking crazy making. Anyway, my very special guest today is Gavin Marsich. Gavin, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Vinny. It's always a pleasure to come and talk with you.
Can you tell us a little bit about what's on your mind now?
Well, it's amazing how, you know, you speak about corruption and, you know, the number one corrupt force, I reckon, out there is the boys in blue, you know, the police being the army for the Ministry of Justice and obviously the Ministry of Justice being a governmental department. You know, as you know, almost a year ago, we were brought into the attention of the media for apparently threatening people that came and got small $25 to $50 loans, you know. And, you know, it's quite funny when I go back on those times and I think to date they still haven't proven that, you know. And, you know, it's a typical media. New Zealand Broadcasting is owned by the government, and obviously the media is intent on only getting out a particular side of the story, and never ever once did they ever investigate anything they did, according to us. Now, since then, I have actually kept going back. I've been into the court, Manukau District Court, for nearly, it's about nine times now, and nine times they still have not contracted me. And as you know, Vinny, as a sovereign, when you enter into court, we don't enter past the bar. We don't acknowledge jurisdiction. We don't contract with them because everything's commercially liable. Okay, so being a commercial outlet, they're there. The Ministry of Justice is there just to get money out of the public. So they're extorting the public for money.
Ironically, this makes them not liable to pay anything because they're able to lie.
Exactly right, and that's exactly what it is. I mean, lawyers, Latin term stands for liars, and they're all part of the conflict getting created in the courts. The lawyers are very much part of it.
And okay, I was just interviewing a guest earlier today who's dealing with these scum suckers, and maybe scum suckers too a strong a word, just straight scum, and they all react to protect themselves, kind of like an immune system, isn't it?
Yeah, they do, and you know, bottom line is it's a word of a court of words, really, because everything that you think you understand in the court is not how it's being portrayed. For instance, you know, they ask you the question, do you understand? And, you know, that's basically saying to you, do you stand under my authority? That sort of stuff. And, you know, in my dealings with the courts, I don't contract with them. I don't go past the bar. But about a month ago, nearly 5 weeks ago, I was actually contracted by the boys in blue. They were sent around here because I didn't turn up to court for one. And that, number one, I didn't know about the court case. So that's number one. Okay. What they've been doing is they've been sending unregistered mail. Sorry. You know, now remember, unregistered, it's not registered mail. And they've been sending it to my letterbox. And if I don't get that mail, then they're going to hold me into breach. Now, holding you into breach means basically at the end of the day, it's against the Crimes Act 1961 that you're breaching their authority to turn up to court. Now, I was put up into the court for possessing a dangerous weapon, okay, which was the meat cleaver. Now, that meat cleaver was in my residence, so, you know, they showed up here and they took my meat cleaver. And then after they took it, then I heard that there was somebody stating that I had actually threatened her with this meat cleaver. Now, Vinny, you've seen me, and I'm a pretty sizable chap. Why on earth would I be threatening somebody who's coming up to ask me for a loan? You know what I mean? So,
if perhaps somebody just wanted to lie about it because they kind of want to demonize finance companies because, I don't know, maybe because most of them aren't foreign-owned yet and they want to just kind of like attack everybody and just say, no, the bank's creating money out of absolutely nothing via your signature is totally legitimate. It's totally great, and they'll expand the money supply infinitely. But one dude's giving like $25 loans or anything like this, and it's actually having an effect on the community, bringing down family violence rates and things of that nature. Oh, he's just a bad dude. Let's go do something about them.
And that's it. And, you know, like, it's funny, I have evidence, transcripts, and also a mobile phone text message that states that that the person that actually gave that false evidence was actually under threat by David Bazzini, which was the head sergeant, senior sergeant of the police force, New Zealand Police. Now, he was given the go-ahead, okay, to come in here and crucify me by Craig Foss. Now, Craig Foss is the Ministry of Commerce, the Minister of Commerce. Now, why did that happen? Well, because a while back there, Financial Markets Authority wanted me to join them, okay, to be part of their organization, okay, to pay them $7,000, okay, annually. Now, I told them to go and take a flying jump and just go for a leap. I did not have to do that because I was set up under a financial, under a advertising arm, and we're a private company, which actually therefore was allowed to help its members, and that's all it was. We're just helping our members with little bits and pieces, you know.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter if you follow their rules; they don't have to.
Yeah, but what it was about was money. They wanted money out of me. They wanted to extort me. And because I disagreed, they then put the heavies on me. Right? They put the boys in blue. They put the media. Julian Lee from MediaWorks TV Limited, okay, he is from the TV 3 News. He did not even once interview me. Not once. He made a comment that he had offered to interview me. That was after he had turned around and put out the story. Why would I interview with a person after he had put out his alleged story? You know? Now, he went out there, he put that alleged story out there, totally false. He had a information from a person who had stolen $1,500 from me and then ran, didn't pay. And because we went to chase him after and to get our money, and we never once went to him at all. In actual fact is he was given phone calls and also letters sent to his residence. So we never ever once approached the man. And apparently I had apparently gone to his house, threatened him, threatened to beat him up, you know, all of that sort of stuff. You know what I mean? So he was a man that was running from the debt. So Julian Lee went off with the story. Okay, the police were brought in, and because they realized that I was a sovereign, okay, because I'd made a very, very, I made a claim that I was a state, I was a sovereign. Now, sovereign meaning not a Māori sovereign, if you understand what I mean, not under Tēnā Rangi Tērā Tanga, okay, but a sovereign under God, okay, a free man, a person that stands free, okay, that's the sovereign that I'm talking about. Now, from there, Vinny, I then turned around and I had enough, you know, abuse from the police, and I'd been going down to the Ministry of Justice and going through 9 different cases. About 5 weeks ago, I was contracted. The boys in blue turned up to my home, and then they arrested me, took me into the cells. While I was in the cells with about 5 other guys, a big Polynesian man came in. He was a policeman, right, with a blue glove on, and he sprayed a solution straight into my face. Now, this is the reasons why I'm not showing my face, Vinny, because I've got a whole lot of lesions all over my face. A chemical solution was sprayed straight into my face. It smelled like air spray, but it definitely didn't have that approach on me. Since then, I've been quite ill. Now, this is the tactics that they're resorting to, Vinny. The scumbaggery that you call the corruption. Why did they do this? You're asking me. You're probably thinking, why have they done this? Because I've put a commercial lien against the government and the Ministry of Justice and the police, New Zealand police. And that commercial lien, okay, is up to $10 trillion. Now, you know I'm not going to get that money out of them. It wasn't the point, Vinny. The point was to bankrupt an already bankrupt country, if you understand what I mean. So what I've done is I've lodged a commercial lien. I've also sent in my bills because I put in a fee schedule to the Ministry of Justice, which is Manukau City Courts, and it was addressed to Phil, okay, Phil Clark. Now, currently, they owe me quite a staggering amount of money. They have been contracting me about 9 times now in the courts. The fee schedule has been put in. I sent them a bill for $58,000, and they refused to pay it. They have not rebutted any claims that I have made. Therefore, an unrebutted affidavit means it stands in truth. So, therefore, this is the reasons why they're coming in and they're doing these little things. All that I ever do, Vinny, is sit in my office and I do my work and I carry on and I do not go out in public. and I do not bother anybody. But because they have put that lie about me and they have continued to keep keep contracting me into their courts when they have not rebutted any of my claims, they are an absolute fraudulent system. They are a dysfunctional courtroom. They are there to get the money out of the people under the Sesta Kvi Trust. The judge is acting as a trustee. The police prosecutor is acting as the executor. And the registrars, okay, administrators of the courtroom, are acting as the administrators of the Sesta Kvi Trust. Now, the Sesta Kvi Trust is obviously Crown-owned and under the American Federal Reserve Bank. Now, all my investigation, all of my information that I've stuck in there has all been stuck in as affidavits. And as you know, affidavits that's put into a courtroom, if they're unrebutted, they stand as truth. Okay, so I've requested several times to be taken through to the law, okay, to the a court of law that resides me. And that court of law is common law, not the commercial law.
Ironically, this is not the side of the bread that it's rebutted on.
No, no. They're putting me under the statutes of law, which I'm not under that jurisdiction as a sovereign. Now, I've put in my papers, I am a sovereign, I have a sovereign immunity, I have declared I'm a sovereign, I've declared I'm a living person, I have notified everyone. They know what they're dealing with. Instead of just leaving this, letting it lie and walking away from it, they continue to try and contract me for monetary gain. Now, I have since found out that I am valued at 1.565 billion dollars on the stock exchange based on my birth certificate and reference numbers. That's what I'm worth. Now, I'm 49 years old, Vinny, and I'm worth $1.565 billion. That is the money that they are accessing. That's why they're intent on contracting people. The New Zealand police, private police, they're called New Zealand private police. Notice the private in there? Because they are not public servants. They do not represent you and me, Vinny. They represent the Crown. Okay, they represent the courts.
And the Crown represents a corporation, the Queen and Right of New Zealand. So basically, they're a private army for the private bankers that run this freaking country and own our natural resources to suppress anybody that would actually threaten their system of perpetual scumbaggery. Is that about right?
That's about right. Now, this is the thing. You know, if you're going to tear down a system, you've got to make sure that something else is available, Vinny. And we've already got there. We already have a system right now that can take over the current system that we've currently got right now. And they know this. Now, they don't want that because at the end of the day, the Americans are trying to get into this country. They're already stating their claim as we know. From our understanding, there's 25,000 American troops sitting in Hunua. Hunua is here in South Auckland. Now, when you go out there, there's a certain area in Hunua that you can't get into. You can't access. It's rural. Now, there's an army base out there, and they've been actually there training. Apparently, they're training our troops. I'd like to know what for. Okay, number one, I do know that there's 250,000 troops apparently in New Zealand soil, or on New Zealand soil, and we don't know about this. Well, how do I know about that? Because I've got friends in the army, mate. And friends, my friends have been telling us that they're just absolutely swamped with American troops. So these things aren't getting out there. People don't know that these things are happening. We know that if they do the TPPA, which is the
Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement,
okay, if this goes ahead, which we believe is already partly signed off, okay, then we understand that they're coming in here because we know that Obama's in here to get our resources. They're talking about our oil. That's why they're drilling here. Okay, and as you know, the US dollar is based on petroleum dollars. So they're here to get our oil. Now, they're here to take over this country. And when they do, you're going to find that right now on the internet, on Facebook and the internet, you're seeing a lot of black, okay, a lot of black Americans being shot, killed, maimed, and just basically put into incarceration. Every single day I turn on my internet, I'm seeing somebody killed. Okay? Now, if this happens, okay, we're well aware that that's going to be happening here as well. And sovereigns have been basically Obama's number one hit list. Apparently sovereigns are the number one terrorist organization in the world.
That's absolutely true. Even what was it? State Department memorandums, I believe, say that people who reference the Constitution of the United States regularly, people who claim to be sovereign, people who talk about the legal fiction, and there's a whole bunch of other things that they defined as terrorists or people who reference the founding fathers, and like it's basically an all out assault on sovereignty in and of itself, because America hasn't been sovereign since the Federal Reserve Bank was instituted in 1913, started issuing the public currency at interest back to them, and started up the IRD to extract all of that wealth and money, even though there's no law requiring people to pay it. And the situation in New Zealand is not entirely different, in my opinion. What's problematic is that even if you're correct, all right, it's like arguing with a mafioso, okay? Hey, I want you to pay your protection money. But you don't have any legal right to take protection money off me.
That's right. But I do have a baseball bat.
It's just, yeah, and it is the mafia tactics, you know what I mean? It's threats and abuse. And it's basically the society lives in fear, okay? Now, as we know, fear controls us, okay? If you're afraid of being killed, harmed, or incarcerated, then you'll always follow, okay, people who are doing it to you.
There is no bravery without fear.
Exactly right. So, you know, basically what I'm trying to get through today, and the most important message is, how do they get such control? Well, the media is one of them, right? Not your media, Vinny, because your media portrays the truth. But we're talking about the propaganda media. The media that has been set up by the government.
Can I offer a proviso? I wouldn't say this offers the truth. It offers honesty. I mean, some of the stuff that happens on here, probably not true. I don't know. I just, yeah.
Look, it's great that you admit that, Vinny. You know, the key is no media can always get it perfectly right, but at least get the message out there that was supposed to get the message out there. Not over-talking somebody when they're trying to talk the truth or to get their side of the story out, and it becomes one-sided, okay? Most important thing is this, okay? When, you know, a person like myself goes into, gets locked up into a cell and then sprayed with a chemical, they're obviously doing it for a reason. Nobody gets sprayed with a chemical, okay, for nothing, really, okay? So obviously I'm ruffling feathers. But one thing that I will state here is that, you know, I'm actually connecting with, you know, people like yourself, but we've had the UN marshals here as well. I don't know whether you know John Monger and his team.
No.
No? Well, John Monger is a United Nations marshal. He's been accredited as a United Nations marshal. He is the law of New Zealand. He currently is here, and he has been spending a lot of time with me. Okay, why? Because obviously at the end of the day, we're starting to move into the sovereign movement. He's there to enact the law. He goes into the courtrooms and he's been observing the court and how they've been acting, the judges, and what they've been doing in there. Absolute fraud. And he's been witnessing it. Now, from there, we have just heard 2 days ago that a sovereign brother, which is here in New Zealand, Vinny, I believe up Northland, has had his home blown up with him in it. Now, apparently, the police and everybody were there, and they blew his house up. But one thing that I haven't seen, that on the news.
SAS, most likely.
Yeah, I haven't seen it on the news.
Yeah. In fact, it's funny, I've just been thinking about this yesterday, is Special Air Services, the New Zealand military, otherwise known as the SAS, are involved in huge amounts of black ops, and and they're all sworn to secrecy and things like that. And, mate, when you're in black ops and you're sworn to secrecy, do you know how many rules there are governing your behaviour, who you can and can't kill, what you can and can't destroy? There are no rules, there's no rules.
Well, John Monger,
there are only orders.
John Monger, which is the United Nations Marshal, actually contacted me on Facebook, and he actually requested, Vinny, your details, your number, right? And because he didn't know you. So it might be a good chance that I introduce you to the United Nations Marshals, okay, and you have a bit of a word to them, but there's a lot of things going on in New Zealand. When we think that we're not a corrupt country, think again. We are majorly corrupt. Now, let's get down to this. I managed to see you at the...
We only have 1 minute left, Gavin.
Okay, okay. One thing I do want to say is voting, okay? What people don't realise is the voting that we've got, or that we are doing, and we're not voting a particular party into Parliament. We're voting for their right to govern us, which means that they can make any decision they want to over us. We are their slaves, and they are our masters. They are committing an actual fraud, and between the date of 28th of October to the 6th of February, they're what they call in salvation mode, which is they're in setup mode. It is between that time, okay, that anyone can make a state and make a claim, okay, to go in and rebut whatever they have. So, I do know that there's a lot of things happening out there, Vinny, and I have waffled on a bit today, but there's a lot of corruption in New Zealand, and we need to start waking up, paying attention, voting people into Parliament. You know, they don't realise what they're doing. They're voting them into governing us and having that power over us. And once you do that, you've lost all control altogether.
Hmm. Gavin Martich, ladies and gentlemen, do you have any websites or services you'd like to plug before we go here, Gavin?
Look, the most important website is we're helping people change their lives just by simply being part of a membership that actually creates income for people. So it's www.gain, that is G-A-I-N, the number 2, the letter U, network.com, all lowercase, okay? So www.gain2unetwork.com. Go and join it. It's free to join, okay? And it has membership levels that you can upgrade and start earning money from everyone that you introduce. And that is a way of earning income, and it's product and service-based, Vinny. Okay? This is the new change. We're coming out with our own systems, okay? We're coming out of the public into the private. Thank you very much, Vinny.
Thank you, Gavin. And just hold on there for just 1 second. Ladies and gentlemen, you do realise that when people get disillusioned by the system and stop voting, the people who are first to stop voting are usually the ones who don't want to vote for the criminal bankers. All right, and that's exactly what the criminal bankers are counting on, that their supporters are dumber than the supporters of freedom. Unfortunately, those who support human freedom often believe they don't play a part in it. But you do. You really do. And voting's one thing on one day every 1,000 days. What are you doing for the other 999 days in order to support human freedom? You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show, and we'll be right back. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the final segment of The Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest joining us now is Penny Bright, the one who explains things that incidentally help the penny drop for people. Penny, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Vinnie, and thank you for your YouTubes and your recordings and your help. It's really important.
You sound really enthusiastic there. Can you give us a bit of a breakdown of what you've been up to these last couple of weeks? I just uploaded a video that an acquaintance of mine, Barack,
oh, yes.
Interesting name, just uploaded about police corruption with Grace Hayden there. How would that go?
Oh, to be honest, I haven't actually seen that one for myself yet. I've been slightly swamped, but Grace is in a very good position to be able to explain. She had 15 years in the police. She was a sergeant and a police prosecutor. And so, I'm sure it'll be very interesting.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, now, speaking of the prosecutor, let's talk about what you've been up to, because I know that you were campaigning in Helensville against John Key in his electorate seat, and you've always got many, many pots on the boil with political crabs just basically sitting there and taking it the whole time until eventually they get all crispy. So lay it on me.
Well, it's fascinating in that at the beginning of the year, I predicted that 2014 would be the year that New Zealand would be shaken to the core with corruption scandals. And it's like this giant corrupt corporate onion, layer upon layer. Well, there's layers that are falling off that I had no idea about. And well done, Nikki Hager, for his book, Dirty Politics, because that has absolutely lifted the lid. And it's interesting that those who seem to play the main role in trying to diss the book, it seems that most of them haven't actually read it. And I really recommend that they do. So, it's been...
Might I interject? The other people that have criticised the book are people who have written books before that was released that said the exact same thing but got totally ignored because they also included a whole bunch of the other really scary facts that the public aren't prepared to accept yet either.
Well, it is interesting, isn't it? Because, I've got evidence, as you know, of massive corruption at the highest levels, which mainstream media have known about and as yet have done nothing. And the classic one there is our Auditor General Lyn Provost being a shareholder in Sky City and not disclosing that rather important fact when I asked her to do an inquiry into a matter relating to Sky City, which is just outrageous, and not forgetting that the Office of the Auditor General is the platinum sponsor of, in my opinion, that bogus and bullshit organisation Transparency International New Zealand. The bulk of their funding, or their number one sponsor, is the Office of the Auditor General. And Transparency International New Zealand, if people don't know, they get about 95% of their funding from government departments who have an absolute vested interest in perpetrating the myth and the rot that New Zealand's the least corrupt country in the world. So shame that they would say that, wouldn't they?
And you've read Dirty Politics. Does it mention any of that?
What's that?
Does it mention any of that kind of corruption scumbaggery in the book Dirty Politics?
No, and full credit to our very good friend Vince Seymour on his website, www.kiwisfirst.co.nz, who's done a marvellous job exposing the corrupt conflicts of interest that exist within Transparency International New Zealand, and particularly with their leader, Susan Snively. So have a read for yourself on that one, folks.
Also, incidentally, his analysis of the corruption within the judiciary, which is also not mentioned in Dirty Politics.
Well, that's exactly right, and I was at the public meeting that we had last Wednesday with Nikki Hager, which was packed in the Mount Eden War Memorial Hall. And Vince asked Nikki Hager, he said, well done, and would he be prepared to write a book on judicial corruption because Vince had plenty of facts and evidence to support that. And I think Nikki's probably a little bit busy right now, but Vince did ask the question, and I also asked the question. This is really important because, I think I'm the only one that's really made a big deal on the fundamental problem with Dirty Politics. Is that the Office of the Prime Minister is not covered by statute or regulation. So here you have at the highest levels of the New Zealand government, the Office of the Prime Minister, whose job it is to cover John Key's political butt as the leader of the National Party. Okay, so they're very partisan, very political. They are the last people that the SIS should be giving anything to.
And so, was any of that in Dirty Politics either?
Not in terms of the solutions, not spelled out, I think, quite as clear as I'm trying to do, because the other office concerning the Prime Minister is the Department of the Prime Minister and Cabinet, whose role is supposed to be apolitical, politically neutral, top-level public servants that are supposed to give the Prime Minister daily advice on matters that affect his role as the leader of the government of New Zealand, which is quite a different role. I mean, you know, it's not complicated. Leader of the National Party versus leader of the government, they do slot into different categories, and you have to be mindful of which category you're in. And it is not the job of the office of the Prime Minister, the party political one, to answer Official Information Act requests. It's the job of the DPMC, Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet. And I have evidence of Official Information Act requests that I've made to John Key as Prime Minister, which have been answered by his Chief of Staff, the highly party political spin doctor, Wayne Eagleson. And I've challenged him. I said, that's not your job. You know, why are you answering this request? You know, so what we've got is, and I asked Nikki, you were there, I asked Nikki Harger at the meeting, did he agree that the office of the Prime Minister was out of control? And he said yes. So what you've got is a very, very disturbing relationship here when you've got the Prime Minister who came from Wall Street where there are no rules, regulations, morals or ethics. Just watch The Wolf of Wall Street and see for yourself. Now, John Key in 2001 was the head of derivatives for Merrill Lynch. John Key was also, as you know, a foreign exchange advisor to the New York Federal Reserve. Well, in 2002, he started his political career in New Zealand. So where did he go to detoxify from his, you know, his dirty, rampant, casino, capitalist Wall Street ways? He didn't. You cannot transmogrify, in my view, someone from Wall Street into being the Prime Minister of this country, because what we've now got is John Key's moral compass is still stuck on Wall Street. So what you've got is this absolute...
Penny, might I interject? For John Key to have a moral compass, he'd have to have morals, which he does. Sorry, continue.
Well, exactly right. But so what you've got is a Prime Minister who's come from a background of no laws, regulations, ethics or morals, with an office of the Prime Minister which seems to be operating in exactly the same way. So how is that but anything but disastrous? And so in my considered opinion, because it's not just John Key, we've got Judith Collins, we've got Murray McCulley, we've, you know, where do you stop in terms of these cabinet ministers? I believe that we need an absolute clean out, and the best way to clean up the office of the Prime Minister is to get rid of the Prime Minister, because the office of the Prime Minister is attached to John Key, Prime Minister. So get rid of John Key and goodbye that office of the Prime Minister. Then what needs to happen is the role of the office of the Prime Minister must be set in statute and covered by regulation, because you can't hold people accountable to the rule of law when there isn't any.
Yeah, yeah. And if,
anyway, so that's hitting that one on the head. Other developments are that I got in first with my complaint to the police about Judith Collins, and the evidence to support my complaint against Judith Collins arising from this very sinister stuff about the minister apparently being involved with trying to undermine the head of the Serious Fraud Office, Adam Feely, when he's dealing with trying to hold white-collar criminals accountable, then you find out that one of these dodgy finance people is actually paying for this to happen. Well, that's the allegation, and, I mean, that's outrageous. So what happened was John Key, on the basis of this email, he decided that was enough for Judith Collins to go. So in my complaint to the Auckland District Commander, Michael Clement, my evidence was, well, if this is good enough for the Prime Minister John Key to sack Judith Collins, well, that is the same evidence and email upon which I'm relying for an alleged breach of Section 116 of the Crimes Act, which is attempting to pervert the course of justice, and also Section 105 of the Crimes Act, which is basically misuse of corrupt use of official information. So anyway, so given that Nikki Haga's dirty politics is all supposed to be left-wing smear based on lies and etc., well, you're just about getting a new inquiry every day. So good luck with that one, John, because what we're actually finding is that it has been a filthy smear campaign from the right wing.
Yeah, you know, it's not just dirty filthy politics. It's
corrupt politics.
Filthy squalor politics.
Yeah,
you know?
It's revolting. And I mean Cameron Slater. What as I think is slightly ironic is that Cameron Slater's dad was an ex-president of the National Party, John Slater. Oh my God, he must just be running around tearing his hair out, because I believe that as a result of dirty politics, which was triggered by Cameron Slater's reference to that poor guy that died down on the West Coast, and referring to him as a feral and having done the world a favour by dying, when he's the fourth son in that family to have died, that is what sparked the hack. And now we've got the book, and now we've just got, as I say, layer upon layer of this crap corporate onion just peeling off at a rate of knots. So I am very hopeful that it's going to be the work of Cameron Slater that's going to help bring down this, what I believe to be corrupt, John Key-led government, and New Zealand will be by far the better for it, because at least we need to have a bit of a fresh start here. We need enforceable codes of conduct for our MPs. We don't currently have that.
Penny, I'm sorry, I really have to interrupt, because this thought just came to me. You know what a Slater is, right? And isn't it funny that they either are found inside rotting pieces of wood or underneath something that's really dark and heavy that doesn't get any of the light of day shone on it? And well, he winds up working for the National Party.
Well, in my view, this concept that politics is a dirty and despicable business, I totally refute that. I mean, I fight hard. I fight really hard, but I fight clean.
Yeah.
You don't have to do dirty politics. I do not touch personal dirt. And I've been offered it. On significant politicians, I've been told there's this and that relating to, you know, personal stuff. I said, I'm sorry, I'm not interested, I don't do that. And I don't. Like, I mean, I've been having such fun on Kiwi Blog, and people should get on there and have a play, you know, you're allowed to have your view, and there's so many sort of right-wing commentators and people that, you know, that they can get really nasty and attack you under, you know, when they don't give their real name, but it's all good practice, and the more venomous and semi-hysterical they get, the more, you know, you're jamming their buttons on full, because that saying, you don't cop the flak unless you're over the target, well, I got that one off you, Vinny, and it's dead damn right.
Yeah, well, I got that from the Lancaster bomber pilots in World War II. I wrote this on my YouTube channel, and I've said this in a previous segment, but I'm going to say it again, because this is probably the most profound lesson from Nikki Haga's dirty politics. Here it is, ladies and gentlemen. You realise that the people who get disillusioned by the entire political system and stop voting first are the ones who don't vote for criminal banking scum like John Key, right? Okay? And that's exactly what they're counting on, that their supporters are dumber than the supporters of freedom. And unfortunately, those who support human freedom often believe that they don't play a part in it and choose to not play a role.
Just back to the Helensville campaign, because, I mean, it's quite a cheeky and audacious thing that I'm doing here, but I want people to help make history by taking the Prime Minister's Helensville seat off him. And I can report that for the time I've been spending out in the electorate talking to the good grounded folk of Helensville that I'm talking to, I'm getting a really positive response. Very few people are refusing to engage or to take copies of my leaflet, because I was brought up on sort of a 6-acre farmlet. I do understand rural, so I feel quite at home in the rolling green hills of Helensville. But just to remind people, just remember, folks, you get two votes. You get a party vote and you get an electorate vote. So what I'm saying in Helensville, why would you waste your electorate vote on John Key when he's number one on the list and going to get in anyway? You can get two for one, as Rodney Hyde would say. But, of course, the fact that we're on slightly different galaxies is just a small technical point. Now, when it comes to other the political parties, if you like the Green candidate or you like the internet smart or Labour candidates, give them your party vote because that's what they want, and give your electorate vote to me. Yeah? So if you're in Helensville and if you're listening to this or you know people that live in Helensville, I'm on the bones of my backside financially, okay? I need a hand. I need you to help get the word out. But what's happened is my good friend Lisa's just finished changing the picture of the poster that will be going up in Helensville on screen-printed Corflute. Up the top in red will be Stop Corruption. Underneath, Vote Penny Bright, Independent MP for Helensville. Now, what I need, folks, that's going to be about $1,500, yeah? And I'm broke. So, if it's 150 people given $10 each. It's not a big ask. The number, the bank account is Kiwi Bank, and the initials are PM, good grief, PM Bright, Penelope Mary, PM Bright, and the number of the bank account is 38-9010-07-257-1900. So please, folks, if you like the work I'm doing, don't leave me in the financial poo, please. And that goes for Vinny as well. He's doing a really good job, and we don't get... when we're fighting the millionaires and we're on the bones of our backsides, we need a lot of people just to give us a little bit of financial help. Yeah, we run on the smell of an oily rag when we just need a couple more Dr. Oil.
Well, we run on the suspicion that there is an oily rag that has some kind of scent, you know.
That's the one. But anyway, the other thing is that I've just been having fun on KiwiBlog today because what a lot of people don't know when I've been going around talking to them is I say to them, do you know that John Key is currently a shareholder in the Bank of America? If you want, don't believe a word I say, think for yourself, check it out. You go to the parliamentary website, www.parliament.govt.nz, and you go to MPs. You click on that, and then you find the Register of Financial Interest, and you click on that, and you go to page 30, John Key, shareholder in the Bank of America. Banking. Now, how is that not a major corrupt conflict of interest when John Key came straight from Wall Street? Whose interest is he serving, and where is the money going? So I've got another couple of Official Information Act requests which are in there. One is to Treasury wanting to know since 2008, since John Key became the Prime Minister, what legislative change over the last 6 years has there been to expose New Zealand at central and local government more to the derivatives market? Because I can tell you right now that Auckland Council, and I've got this from an Official Information Act reply, is since they were Super City Council was set up, we are exposed to the tune of $5.8 billion in derivatives.
That's the most conservative estimate I've ever heard, Penny, because according to Evelyn Gilbert, Aotearoa Wider Perspective, by 2011, we'd already taken on at least $112 billion.
I'm talking about Auckland Council.
Just Auckland Council alone.
Auckland Council, $5.8 billion, and also $5.5 billion we are in debt to various financial institutions. I asked for the exact information, how much has Auckland Council borrowed from whom for what, and I wanted the exact names, but I got aggregated groupings like financial institutions, but not spelling out their names, because if just one line there says Bank of America is involved at any stage, well, that should be the fact that politically cuts John Key's throat, as it were.
Don't you really hate it? Massive. How if somebody just answered an honest question, boom, you've got them. But if they don't answer honestly, it takes you about 10 years to expose the fact that they're full of crap?
Well, I actually have quite a good track record in getting Official Information Act requests. So my secret there is the open letter Official Information Act request. So when the party that is getting the request made can see, has to troll through, dozens and dozens and dozens of names of mainstream media, members of other political parties, councillors, etc. So the world is watching you ask the question. You have a lot better chance of getting the reply. But I've got them, you know, quite well trained now. They know, or else I get on TalkBack or, you know, wherever and give them a burst on there as well. So, but my answer to that one, because people don't know this either, the Cabinet Manual is not implementing the Public Records Act. When I become the fiercely independent MP for Helensville, and that House will not know what hit it, I mean it, one of the first things that I want to do is to help ensure the proper and thorough implementation of the Public Records Act, which says the public, we are entitled to know where our monies, etc., are going, and full and accurate records are supposed to be kept at central and local government. Well, then, so that's the law. But I find a lot of MPs aren't even aware of that law. And when you look at the Cabinet Manual, when you look at records, there is a requirement under the Cabinet Manual for the storage and disposal of records, but it is not mentioned the creating and maintaining of records. This is at the highest level. So you have people meeting with the Minister or Prime Minister, having really important, significant meetings covering affairs of state. Nobody's taking the minutes, and nobody can remember the conversations. I mean, your local cat club keeps the minutes of their meeting. Give me a break. This is unbelievable. So what I would
Well, I would say that's because they're a cat club and not a club full of wolves.
Ah, maybe. But the thing is, what I would do, I had this little brainwave every now and again, the light bulb goes off, and what I would do is I would split the responsibility for the implementation of the Public Records Act away from the National Office of the Archives, which come under the Department of Internal Affairs. I would split it in half. I would make it the role of the Ombudsman to cover the creation and maintenance of public records and the storage and disposal, keep that with National Archives, because that would kill two birds with one stone. The Office of the Ombudsman is snowed under with requests for information from people, basically, as I understand it, because a lot of information that should be publicly available isn't. So if the Office of the Ombudsman had the job of implementing the Public Records Act, which is the law, and it's not being carried out, well, then that would mean they'd have less work to do chasing up requests for information because it would be available for public scrutiny in a proper way, like it should be anyway. How's that?
Well, that'd be nice in an ideal world. Actually, my question that I asked at Nikki Hargis, I'm sorry if I appear like I'm not listening, I just have random thoughts, was about psychopathy, right? And you have a look at the, what were those character attributes? I've got it here in terms of the corporate psychopath. There was a great documentary called I Am Fishhead. And then when I saw the symptoms of what a corporate psychopath is like, the name John Key was just like, boom! And then, not just him, but all bunches of them. Here they are, ladies and gentlemen. Charming and enchanting when you first meet them, but are ultimately shallow, have few meaningful lasting relationships, crave money, power, and are willing to sabotage, intimidate, manipulate, steal, defame, lie, and cheat shamelessly without guilt, desiring attention and idolization with pathological narcissism and despising criticism and often sexually promiscuous. Now, I don't know if the Wolf of Wall Street, you know, rings bells for anybody here with that list, okay?
Yeah.
And now, here's the other thing. Let's say, for the sake of argument, that there are a lot of these corporate psychopaths in Parliament, a lot of them, and that they will try all of these dirty tactics in order to prevent themselves from being exposed. That's the kind of thing that I was talking about when I asked Nikki, when I was asking Nikki Hargis about.
Well, you see, what the other thing, you know, when you work your head down, so I'm up working away at things, and every now and again, this enormous truth jumps up and bashes you on the head with a sledgehammer. And one of these enormous truths that hit me was that point I made earlier. How do you expect people who come from the private sector, which is based on money-making, looking after your company, your shareholders, your mates, your friends, yourself, how do they transmogrify into public servants who want to serve the public or the public interest? They are on different galaxies, and they don't transmogrify. And what happens, in my view, is these private sector people bring their private sector ways with them, and it contaminates the whole concept of public service. Turns out to be individual self-serving, and it hits the whole, you know, turns it upside down. And I believe that what we've got to do is to get back to a proper, genuine public service model, because at the moment it's like we've got an infestation of corrupt corporate cockroaches. They're everywhere and they're out of control. That's why we've got to have this massive political extermination, as it were. I mean that in a political way.
In a very loving way.
In a Christian way. The national government's got to go. It's got to be cleaned out. And so how best to do that? I mean, to be honest, God help me, I'm thinking of strategically holding my nose and party voting Labour, although there's a number of policies I don't agree with. I think the key thing is, at the moment, that the most important thing is we've got to get rid of this Wall Street bankster-led national government, and we need a huge clean-out. We do.
I agree, and the other element here is to look at Parliamentarians for Global Action, which David Cunliffe, John Key, and almost every other political party aficionado is a part of, where they basically fly them around the world and go to big conferences in like the Ritz-Carlton or something like that and teach them how sustainability and Agenda 21 and corruption and scumbaggery is such a great thing and how to pull it off without getting caught. Penny Bright is my wonderful guest. Thank you very much for your time and your efforts to save humanity from the copious quantities of scumbaggery that are afflicting at least this little part of our haven in New Zealand. The website, ladies and gentlemen, is waterpressure.wordpress.com, and also pennybrightpublicwatchdog.org. Is it Penny? Or is it .com?
Well, I'm not quite. My highly trained staff may have been slightly overwhelmed, but if people want to get some more up to date. Research that no one else has done, you're probably better to have a look actually on www.pennybrightnumber44mayor.org.nz and look at the action plan there against white-collar crime, corruption and corporate welfare. But as I say, dirty politics, it doesn't have to be dirty. It mustn't be dirty. We've got to clean it up.
Yeah, exactly. Get out your shovel and brush and clean up that stuff, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you again sometime, folks. And please remember, this is a listener-supported broadcast, and I am desperately in need of your support. I volunteer all my time and my effort. I do this full-time. There is no... I'm employer-phobic, okay? I literally have a panic attack if I even think about getting gainfully employed. It's terrible. So I need you to go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and start donating a couple of dollars a month, $5 a month. That would be really, really nice right about now. And that way I can keep working a lot harder than I even did when I was actually being paid by the hour. For you, ladies and gentlemen, to give the activists a platform and to make sure the information is made available to you, because guess what? Nobody else is going to do it, are they? Go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, donate today. We'll see you again sometime, folks. Thank you for listening.